seems to be completely missed is that there are 1.5 million deaths from tuberculosis, of which about a fifth are actually related to AIDS. They've got both problems. But that's sort of up-to-date news. I became interested in TB way back, I think, because I was working in West London and saw quite a lot of cases of TB amongst the Asian community, where it was and still is incredibly common. And then from there, a friend of mine from medical school was a missionary doctor in a hospital in northern India, in a state that was then Bihar. It's now changed to Jharkhand. And I would go to see him fairly regularly, every couple of years or so. I had spent a bit of time there and give a little bit of a hand and a bit of a bolster and a bit of a moral encouragement. But he did say to me, do spend more time here, Peter, and we can teach you how to do cesarean sections. And that really alarms me, because I'm a physician, you see, and we physicians, and this isn't commonly known, have taken the oath of the Hippocratic Oath, which actually says we will not cut. Honestly, that's what the Hippocratic Oath says. I promise not to cut, even for the stone. So actually physicians, I'm being facetious here, but physicians are actually sworn not to cut. But never hand a physician a sharp instrument. That's one of the basic things. So I thought, no, I'm not going to spend enough time to learn how to do cesareans, but I'm very happy to come and deal with the tuberculosis program or things that physicians deal with. And at the time I first went to that hospital, they only cured about 10% of cases of TB. That's absolutely appalling, because what the trouble with TB is, you see, you have to treat it for 6 months. You diagnose it by looking at the sputum under a microscope, and then you can say, oh yes, you've got the TB bug, you need the treatment. Here are the drugs. You need to take them for 6 months, come back and get another lot in a month. But of course, people would feel better after a month and they wouldn't come back. And this is how drug resistance built up, because people would stop their medication too early or take a little bit and a little bit. And so we're in enormous problems. So in 1993, WHO said, look, we have got to do something about this. And they devised a simple way of ensuring that patients took their medication. There are a number of measures, but the main thing was directly observed therapy. In other words, you've got a second party, a third party, not the doctor who looked after the patient, not the patient themselves, but a third party to watch the patient swallow every tablet of medication. And that has changed, revolutionized cures of TB across the world in the last 20 years, and it did so in this hospital, and they kept good records, and their cure rates went up to above 90%. Absolutely fantastic. That wasn't my doing, that was the doing of some public health workers who worked in that hospital. But going back to that hospital time and time again, I saw the change that just didn't really cost any extra money, just better organization made in curing TB. And if we could roll out TB drugs and TB awareness as we rolled HIV awareness, we can do the same thing for TB over perhaps the next 10 to 20 years. That's the hope. But as I went to that hospital, one of the so-called group of Emmanuel hospitals in northern India that works in the most isolated and poorest areas of India, I realized that there were some people there doing a different job in the same hospital who were actually being funded by Tear Fund. And they were working really in the community, not so much in the hospital. And every good hospital has its own jeep, which goes out in the community every day and does things like raise awareness of disease or adult literacy. You might think, what's adult literacy got to do with hospitals? The hospital is a good base to send out people to teach women particularly how to read. Illiteracy rates in Bihar state 75% around 20 years ago. It's probably better now. But if women cannot read, they cannot read instructions, they cannot take medication, they cannot show their children how to take medication, they cannot feed their children properly. It's a basic public health to get women to learn to read, and that's what Tear Fund were doing. Tear Fund were also, there's plenty of rice grown in that area, but Tear Fund were showing them how to grow other crops, vegetables, fruits, and so on, to give them a balanced diet with vitamin C. Hygiene, sanitation, desperately important in India. Again, showing them how to dig latrines, and toilet twinning is part of that, and you know all about that. So Tear Fund, I found, were on the ground at the very place that I was already working, doing work out in the community. And I realized, actually, Tear Fund, and probably that's true of any faith-based charity, has, if you can call it so, an unfair advantage over other charities, because anywhere in the world there will be a church or a community of Christians, in this case a hospital, where they can, as it were, use as a springboard a stepping stone into that community. And so that's the partner where Tear Fund will work with, and they'll see what's going on, they'll train the people, and the money will be used very directly. A year or so ago, a man called Angus Deaton was awarded the Nobel Economics Prize. He's not the chap you see on the telly. This is a serious economist, aged 70-something. And unfortunately, he said at the time he received that Nobel Award, but most of money given to developing countries is wasted. And that may be true in the sense that governments give to government. And so much of government-to-government money is seconded or absconded with by the leaders in corrupt countries. Tear Fund doesn't work like that. Tear Fund works at ground level, so the money goes to the people in the community, in the hospital, in the church, to be used directly by the people who need it. And Louise, that example of that lady who was set up at small businesses, that's what Tear Fund are so good at. So that was one side of my progress, as it were, through to be a Tear Fund. And the other is very simple, that Richard Avery is a member of our church, and he's employed by Tear Fund to recruit volunteer speakers, and so we came together like that. And of course, what Tear Fund does, I think it's very good at this, it picks a particular theme for a year or so and works through that theme. And you've had toilet twinning and clean water. That was, as it were, last year's theme. This year's theme is so-called No Child Taken. And this is perhaps an even more worrying thing than even the absence of clean water, and that is that children are trafficked. They may be kidnapped or they may be sold by their parents because the parents cannot afford to keep the children. The parents optimistically think that they're selling their child on to get a good job. They will be in slavery, perhaps into their adult lives and beyond as a result of that sale, and this isn't realized. But if one can, as it were, create small businesses, then the parents will not need to sell on their children. They will have no, they don't want to, clearly, but they feel they have to give their child food as they're brought up. But if parents are given a small amount of money to start their own businesses, which is what Tear Fund does, then that child trafficking will not be needed. Now, I've got a DVD that I'd like to show you about a child that's actually was nearly kidnapped. Thank you.
I thought that man had caught him.
Thank you very much for that. We'll come back to that at the end. But I want to look now at that parable of the Good Samaritan. So if you have Bibles, do turn to them. And that particular verse, particular part of the verse, I think is so relevant, in which it says the Good Samaritan took pity on him. Well, we know the story terribly well, don't we, about the man who was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and was mugged, robbed, left half dead by the side of the road. And Jesus, being Jesus, laces in some harsh criticism of the traditional Jewish authorities, of course, doesn't he, in this story? Because the first person to pass down the road was a priest. And the priest would have seen this person lying by the side of the road and didn't know whether that person was dead or alive. But of course, if the priest had touched that person, the person had been dead, the priest would have had to go through a series of purification rituals, which would have lasted some days, and would not therefore have been able to continue his job as he got to wherever it was he was going. So, priorities, not a job's worth. He left the man and passed by on the other side of the road. And I would imagine the Levite had a similar problem, because the Levites, as you know, were from the tribe that were not given land when the children of Israel came into the promised land, and they had therefore a priestly role, and they devised their income was from their priestly role in the temple and the tithing that the Jews gave. And so he would have had a similar problem if he had touched this man and the man had been dead. He would have had to go through this process of purification and so passed by on the other side just in case he could carry on with his work. Warped priorities, as you would say. But the despised Samaritans, the people who had become impure in their own race because they had stayed behind after the Babylonian captivity and intermarried with people who weren't Jews, the despised Samaritan was the one who came and, I suppose, had nothing to lose. Well, he certainly had something to lose. He could have been mugged as he bent over and tended the wounds. The same fate could have happened to him. He was presumably not had a bit of wealth, because he was able to have his own donkey and his own various things that you need, to his own wine and so on, to pour on the wounds. And he had money, of course, to give to the innkeeper later on. But the word used here, I can hardly pronounce it in Greek. It's a bit like isthmus. It's splag shidzomai, splagshizomai. It's that word, and it means so much more than pity, because it's about a word. The splag, the beginning bit, comes from the bowels, the guts. The splanchnic nerve supplies the guts. The splanchnic artery supplies the guts. If there are gastrologists among you, you will know that. And that's the same word as used in the Greek. The very bowels of the Samaritan were moved towards this poor man. And that's the word that's used there, the word of compassion. And that's the word that Jesus uses and used often in the Old Testament. A real compassion, a pity for that person. And of course we read that he goes and takes this man to the inn and looks after him that night and takes care of him. And then the next day he takes out 2 silver coins and he gives them to the innkeeper and says to the innkeeper, look after him, and when I return I will reimburse you for any extra expense that you may have. And so we see there Jesus using this as an example to the expert in the law to show him who his neighbor was, who he had responsibility towards. And in a sense, if the Samaritan could do this for a Jew, the Jew could do it for the Samaritan and can do it for everyone. This was a story about barriers being broken right across society as we knew it then. And the message would have come home very clearly. And I wonder if we take this message on, I'm sure we do, in its meaning and what it says to us. But I wonder if we might just look at this in a slightly different way. Perhaps you've had this idea before and this isn't anything new. But let's look at the story again. A stranger comes to the person who's in difficulties, who's been beaten up, who's broken, who's wounded. This stranger looks after this person for a time, but then this stranger, this Samaritan, goes away, leaving the innkeeper to look after the poor, broken man. And the innkeeper is entrusted with those 2 silver coins. We don't know when the Samaritan's going to return. The innkeeper was very trusting to think that the Samaritan would return and reimburse. It might have been months or years. The innkeeper might have had to spend a lot of money. The innkeeper was very trusting of the stranger who came, looked after the man, and then went, leaving 2 silver coins. Does that remind you of something else in the Bible? Jesus has come into the world for a time in his body, for 33 years, and has healed that broken world to some extent, but has left us with the invitation to carry on looking after, of healing, of tending his broken world. And he promises to return again and to reimburse us according to how we have looked after his broken world. So the Good Samaritan isn't us. The innkeeper is us. And Jesus has left us with his world to tend his world. I noticed you were saying at the beginning that we have a broken world. And that's just the position, really, of the poor man who was mugged. And it's just the position of the world that we have in front of us. What are we going to do with God's broken world? A little while ago, there was a book published called The Life You Can Save. The Life You Can Save, quite a small book. It was by a man called Peter Singer, who certainly isn't a Christian. He's an Australian philosopher with rather strange views. But this book was quite striking because he starts off with the story. And you imagine yourself walking to work, and you find a child, 18 months or so, thrashing around in a pond. Whenever I read this, I think of Ashton Park and walking across Ashton Park as you might do in the morning to work. Gosh, if I had a surgery in West Kirby, I could do the walk myself, actually, just thinking of that. Anyway, I don't. But you're walking to work and you see this small child thrashing around in the pond, and you know that if you're nobody else around, you're the only one there, only you can save this child from drowning. But you realize that if you go into that pond to save the child, you'll ruin your new shoes, which you only bought yesterday, and the lovely suit that you've got for the job. The trousers and the shoes will have to be thrown out. What do you do? Well, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? Obviously, you go in and rescue the child, But that's a parable, as it were, of what's going on in the world. Yes, we've got lovely new suits and trousers and everything else, but there's a need. There's a need out there, isn't there? And our response is dependent on how we meet that need. I asked one of the young girls to pop out these cards around the... Have you all got sight of these cards? Probably not quite enough to go round, but anyway, I'll tell you what they're for, and you can pass them round as you wish. If you open up these cards, it's a bit like a triptych. I use that, you know. It's in three parts. And the part over here on the right is something for you to fill in, not so that you commit yourself to giving anything necessarily to Tear Fund, but in order to receive news, etc., from Tear Fund. Every quarter I get a whole bunch of stuff from Tear Fund, including a magazine, including their prayer diary. And I actually think the prayer diary is the best information source I've ever met about what's going on in developing countries, in the poorest countries, and how we can help in terms of prayer. Anyway, so if you'd like to be in touch with Tear Fund, and even if you already are, Tear Fund asks me to ask you to fill in one of these anyway so they can update their records. And if you do fill out one of these cards and pass it to me before you leave at the end of the service or at the end of... Do we get coffee refreshments? Oh, God, yeah. So that would be a good time to fill in your card and everything else. And I will, if you do that, I will give you... I won't give it to you unless you fill out a card and give it to me. I will give you one of these things called A Little Book of Growth, which Tear Fund has produced. And it's a little book of about 20, 30 pages, well, 40, I suppose, counting on both sides. And on each page is a little story which you can use as a kind of reflection, a Christian reflection on the day about somebody that Tear Fund has helped, like this lady who rose from the dead. But there's more to this book than that, and that is that inside the cover... these rather sort of funny-looking bits of paper that look like blotting paper, if you know what blotting paper is. I realise I haven't seen blotting paper for about 30 years. But anyway, this looks a bit like blotting paper. And if you simply tear it out, scrunch it up, moisten it, and put it in some peat, it should grow wildflowers. So it's a little book of growth, both spiritually and florally. The downside is I've only got three left. Such has been the demand in other churches, and I think Tear Fund have stopped doing them now. So it's first come, first served, or share. But anyway, that's my message. So fill out a card and give it to me. Oh yes, I see the coffee's already out there. Splendid, good. Well, I won't keep you from there. But just to remind you, that Samaritan took pity. The innkeeper too had to take pity, had to have pity. And are we going to be, not perhaps the good Samaritans that we thought of this, but the good innkeepers as we tend for Christ's world until he comes again? Shall we pray? Lord, we thank you for this wonderful parable, this story of the man who was showed good, but also there are two men who showed good here. We do pray, Lord, that we might be faithful in tending, in caring for your broken world until you come again. We ask it in your name.